Okay, it's recording. Hello, my name is Alex Gorman. I am 17 years old. I am speaking with my mother, Annette Pine. Yes, she's my mother. And we are in Wellesley, Massachusetts right now. So I'm just going to get right into it. So, Mom, first, tell me a little bit about your parents, where they both lived growing up, and then ultimately how they met and where they ended up after their marriage.
Okay. My parents were born in or near a small town in the middle and toward the end of World War II, a small town in former East Germany, what became East Germany after World War II. My mother's family then, at the end of the war, moved to West Germany in 1945. But in the summer, she would visit her grandparents in East Germany, and there happened to meet my dad. So they were 16 and 17 years old, respectively, when they met back in the 1950s. And what was the rest of your question?
Where did they end up after their marriage?
What happened? Oh, and then my mom moved to East Germany to marry my dad in 1965, and they lived in East Germany.
But you say, just briefly, was that easy or hard for her to make that decision?
It was very hard. They spent some 7 years trying to make that decision. My dad was contemplating whether he should escape East Germany to go to West Germany, but decided against it because he was afraid of the repercussions that the rest of his family would suffer. So then my mother decided to move to East Germany instead to be with him.
So, you were then born in East Germany at the height of the Soviet regime in the middle of the Cold War. Middle end of the Cold War. I don't know. Looking back, how did this time period kind of manifest itself in your day-to-day life? How did you experience it?
You're right. I was born there in 1966. I went to school there. How did it manifest itself? Well, in such mundane things as, you know, joining the young pioneers in first grade and wearing the blue kerchief around your neck with the white blouses, and then the red kerchief in third grade, and then joining what was called the Free German Youth Organization when you're in eighth grade. But basically with the expectation that you had to participate in all these communist party youth group organizations if you wanted to succeed in the state. And, you know, so, but that socialist life sort of infiltrated all aspects of the school life. So one of my favorite anecdotes is in PE, when we practiced track and field and things like that, one of the disciplines we were practicing was grenade throwing. And unfortunately, I was horribly bad at that. And my father always joked that I would probably kill myself rather than any enemy because I couldn't throw it very far.
Perfect. Is there any specific moment kind of in your youth or young adult life where you realized kind of there was something different about the USSR regime? Maybe there was something wrong with it? Is it kind of a knowledge you always grew up with? Or was it like there kind of some aha moment?
Well, I grew up with that knowledge that there is a different way of life by virtue of the fact that my mom was from West Germany and that her family, her parents and siblings and my cousins and so forth would come and visit us as much as they could because we couldn't visit them. So I was very much attuned to the fact at home that life was different. But I'll tell you an anecdote. When I was in first grade, and, you know, you're just starting school, and I came home from school one day. My mom would always ask me, so how was your school day? What's new? And I came home and said, oh, they were asking us today about the TV show that you watch, you know, as a good night story that they had on. It's called The Sandman. And you watch that every night at like 7 o'clock or 6:45 on TV. But my family watched West German TV. So my mom literally blanched at the question because, and then said, what did you say? I said, because the question was, by what means or what vehicles does the Sandman use in these little TV shows? How does he travel? And every kid raised their hand. So my mom blanched and said, my goodness, what did you say? And I said, well, I said it comes by helicopter. And then my dad came home from work that night. My mom immediately said, can you imagine? They are trying to find out from the kids what TV station the parents are watching at home, whether it's East German or West German TV, which is forbidden. And they were afraid that I had said the wrong thing by saying the Sandman comes by helicopter. So that night, for the very first time in my life, my parents turned on East German TV, and lo and behold, the East German Sandman also traveled by helicopter. So we were good.
So you can probably suspect where I'm going with this. Obviously, you kind of told me already how your parents felt about it. You can't suspect it. You're shaking your head. No. Alrighty, well, your youth is a little bit different from most people's. So, obviously, your parents weren't exactly satisfied with the DDR life. How did your mother adjust to East German life? Did she ever? And what did your parents do about their situation?
Well, as I think my previous anecdote just indicated to you, She did not adjust to life there. She felt very isolated. She really didn't settle in well there at all. My father tried his best to, you know, help her assimilate, but she really couldn't. And it became ever harder because she wasn't allowed to see her family when people got sick, when babies were born and so forth. And even then, when there were provisions in the law to travel, she wasn't allowed to go, or when she did go, my father lost his job, which was highly unusual by East German standards, since you didn't have unemployment and people weren't supposed to lose their jobs. So eventually in 1981, my parents made the decision to ask to leave the country, to be reunited with their family in the West.
And what happened when they applied to leave Germany?
Well, they were rejected because... Yes, because you weren't allowed to leave, and they just said, sorry, can't do. And my parents applied again and again. And in addition, they went to the American embassy and the West German, it wasn't really an embassy, but a representation in East Berlin in order to get advice and let them know that of our desire that we wanted to leave. And a year after they'd first asked to leave in 1981, in 1982 in the fall, they were arrested.
And what was going through your mind? Were you were there for your father's arrest, right?
No, I was not. Oh. My sister was there.
Oh. Well, what was your kind of immediate experience? How did you find out what was going through your mind there?
Well, I was in school that day. It was a school day. It was November 4th, 1982. Came to school, and in between each class, during recess, or even during those 5 or 10 minutes between classes, each and every time the teacher would take me to a special room and keep me there and then take me to the next class. So I wasn't allowed to speak with anybody, no classmates, not my siblings who were in the same school. And none of us knew what was going on. And then after school, they took us to the Stasi headquarters in the town, the secret police headquarters, and kept interrogating us. But again, separately, I happened to see through windows or so that my siblings were there too, which was very upsetting to me, but I didn't know why. And they kept asking us about our desire to leave, and all day long I kept thinking, because they were asking so many details, that maybe, just maybe, they were finally going to give us permission to leave. But after hours of interrogation, at the end of the day, they informed us that they, in fact, arrested my parents.
And so now you are basically alone with your two younger siblings. You were the oldest of three, right? And, I mean, this is kind of heartbreaking that you're, you were, I think, 16 years old, with two younger siblings and no parents in this country. How did you adjust? I mean, tell me what happened. What responsibilities kind of fell on you?
Well, first of all, they wanted to put us into a state-run orphanage that evening. And each of us, my siblings were there too, independently refused. And, and then they didn't allow us to go to our great-grandparents on the grounds that they were too old. And finally, they let us go to my parents' best friends who agreed to take us in. But still, the question remained, we couldn't stay with those friends because they only had one bedroom for the three of us in a very small flat. So the question remained what to do with us. And we couldn't be on our own since I wasn't of age yet and we needed a guardian. So then I approached the Protestant church to see whether a nurse who was in training there at the hospital, at a church-run hospital, would be willing to be our guardian in exchange for room and board at our house. And she did. And that is how we actually were allowed to stay at our house, the three of us, with this 22-year-old nurse as our guardian.
and kind of the responsibilities you then had. I mean, you were basically raising your siblings, right?
Which we were raising ourselves, yeah. Yes. We were running the house. We would get up at 5 in the morning to heat the coal-fired stove. We would go shopping. In fact, we also went shopping for my great-grandparents who couldn't move anymore. We were taking care of everything. And eventually, after a month, finding out where my parents were being held in prison, managing the correspondence for that, visiting them once a month in prison, and so on.
So, briefly, can you tell me, I mean, obviously you were not in prison, but can you tell me just briefly about kind of either one of your parents' experiences in prison that you know of? I mean, from what you've heard, what you saw.
Well, they were being held separately. They were being investigated for the alleged crimes for about 7 months. And, you know, after a month, I was allowed monthly visits with them, each of them separately for half an hour. And it became apparent very quickly that my mother's health was deteriorating. She was losing weight every month, was sick. And my father, who was then allowed to see her too occasionally, very briefly supervised visits, noticed the same thing and managed through his lawyer to get her released. And when she was released the day after their, a few days before their trial, and it was a complete shock to us. I mean, literally, she looked like, you know, a concentration camp survivor because she'd lost so much weight. She had so many health issues, and then she spent the next 6 months in hospital, basically, and in care and rehab.
How long total were each of them? How long was your mother imprisoned?
Well, she was 7 months during the investigation period. Then she was out of prison for about 6 months when she was in hospital and rehab and so forth. And then they put her back in prison, even though her health didn't improve one bit and she didn't gain any weight. But they put her back in prison, and then she was in prison for another 5 months or so.
And the same for your father?
Well, my father was in prison the entire time. So he was, in fact, in prison for a bit over a year and a half.
So you were finally released to the West. What year was that?
1984.
Wow. I mean, this is a huge adjustment, basically. Briefly, again, you literally entered a new world. Tell me kind of about how you left, the day you left, your emotions there, just briefly kind of tell me first what happened, like how you were able to leave, and then once you actually left.
So my parents were released directly out of prison May 31st, 1984, and we children were still left behind, but at that point there was the expectation in the law that since we were all still minors at that point, we should be legally reunited with our parents in the West within 6 months. However, I turned 18 after 2 months. So the real concern was that the authorities would run out the clock on me and that I would be left behind and my siblings would be allowed to leave. But lo and behold, literally 2 weeks before my 18th birthday, we did get the permission to leave. And then there's all kinds of paperwork you need to fill out. They take away your passport and they give you a temporary, you know, identity papers. You get on a train and leave. And as the train was making its way out of East Germany to West Germany, it went meanders through the border there. And my grandmother, who'd come from West Germany to escort us, you know, I kept looking out the window, finally saw the border because I'd never physically actually seen it until that point in my life. And it made me so angry because from the train, it just looked so insignificant and so unassuming, even though it was so deadly with the, you know, shooting fences and so forth, with the landmines and everything. And I was just seething with anger. And my grandmother, as we were moving on the train and she saw how upset I was, kept saying to me, "Don't say anything. Don't open your mouth. You don't know whether you're in East Germany or West Germany right now because the train sort of meanders through the border. You need to wait until we are all through this because otherwise they can just take you off the train. So don't say anything."
And then you kind of got to the West. What was kind of your first reaction there? Like the biggest kind of
adjustment? Oh, the biggest reaction. I'll tell you, we got off the train and we walked through the train station in Cologne. And, you know, there are like these vegetable and produce booths there. And I kept asking my grandmother whether this was all plastic because I'd never seen so many fresh fruits and vegetables in my life. And it all looked perfect and it smelled so good. And so I was just saying, is this all plastic? This can't be real.
So basically you finished your last year of high school, just kidding, your last 2 years of high school in East Germany. in West Germany. Just kidding. And then you came to the U.S.
That's correct.
For college. And where did you go, and kind of what was the big adjustment there, coming to a new country again?
So I'd finished school in East Germany, 10 years of mandatory schooling. Then I wasn't allowed to go to school anymore because my parents wanted to leave. And so I was out of school for a year. Then I resumed schooling in West Germany, 11th and 12th grade. But at that point, 13 years were mandatory. But I decided in 12th grade to apply to college and was accepted. And when given a choice between going to college or staying in high school, decided I'd rather go to college. So I applied to Princeton, Harvard, Yale, and Brown, and was accepted everywhere, and got the nicest scholarship package from Princeton, and so that's where I went.
And you were, and you believe you may have been one of the first East German students to attend.
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Just an Ivy League university or university in general in the U.S.?
Well, that I couldn't say, but I think certainly as a recent, you know, emigre from East Germany for an Ivy League school, yes, absolutely.
Wow. And so finally, you actually ended up studying Soviet language and literature, which I always find a little ironic because, I mean, you were kind of in this oppressive regime for so long and then go around and study literature. But anyway, what is kind of one takeaway you take from your childhood, something that you have learned that's made you the person you are today? I mean, obviously all of our experiences shape us, but what's really one experience you kind of will kind of really learn from and hope that other people can learn from as well?
Never give up. I mean, I tell you, the day my parents were imprisoned and we came back to our house that evening to get some PJs and stuff like that because we happened to have a house key, first of all, it was shocking. You know, we were in tears. Our parents had just been imprisoned and arrested. We were alone. And then to see how the Stasi had torn the house apart and how the home that we'd grown up in as children was just utterly destroyed and turned upside down kind of closed that chapter on my childhood. But still, I was crying my eyes out. And a friend of my father's came to visit and saw this and then turned to me and said, Annette, stop crying. You've got to be strong now. Your parents are relying on you. You've got to watch out for your children, for your siblings, and so forth. And that's really been a mantra for me since then, ever, to stand up for other people, stand up for my family, help where I can, and, you know, soldier on. You've got to move on in life. You can't let other things get you down.
Perfect. Thank you very much. That was an excellent interview. I don't know what else to say. You want to just say your name and age and one more time and...
Okay, my name is Annette Pine. I'm 51 years old, and I live in Wellesley, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Thank you very much, Mom. Done? Are you sure you are finished recording? Yes.